Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Monday evening. If this is Garden of Enlightenment with Lu Yu Wildbud and Gray Eye Smith and Francisco and Weaver of Dreams. Our Weaver is traveling today from Spain, so I hope she has a safe travel coming home. I wanted to tell you a little bit about ourselves. Our group is titled Late Night Poets, and you can find us on allpoetry.com. It is a huge website with thousands of poets, and it's free to join, and you can find us there and join our group, the Late Night Poets group. And we also have radio shows after midnight, which are on the edgy side, so we welcome you to listen to those shows. And just to let you know, a lot of poets have donated their poetry in books that were collected, and you can find us on Amazon.com, and just like our group, Late Night Poetry Anthologies, these poets from around the world dedicated their poems for these books to be written to help support these shows. And tonight we will be doing front page poetry and open poetry. And so check us out if you don't mind listening to my occasional coughs and my squeaky office chair that I keep forgetting to grease up. But let's go ahead and start picking up our callers. I'm excited for tonight. Caller 778, who am I speaking with?
Hello, Louie Wildove. This is Gray Eyes Smith.
Hi, Gray. Welcome to the show, and he will be my right-hand man tonight. Thank you, Gray, for stepping in for Katie.
Absolutely.
And this is his, you all know who he is, because I love his very white bass voice. It's our buttery poet, Lerat. Hi, Lerat.
Hey, Louie, how you doing? Hey, Gray.
I'm doing good. And we have another caller. Caller 804, who am I speaking with?
Hello, everyone. This is Salwa.
Salwa!
Hi, everyone. Hello.
Hello,
Salwa. Hello, Aloha.
I'm so happy to have you.
Everyone.
I'm excited.
Of course.
How long can you stay with us tonight, sweetheart? So I make sure I don't.
I know, because you have to get up early to teach. I have to really up very early.
Okay.
I just have to read and go. I'm so sorry. I wish I could, but my schedule is crazy.
That's fine. I'm just happy you called, so I'm excited about that. We miss you so much, and I miss your
you
giggle. So I'm going to go ahead and hint Gray. She's in the open poetry section. Could you please pull her poem up for us so she can read?
Here you go. Yeah, sorry, I'm just getting there now.
Thank you, Gray.
Okay, posting it to the group.
And I hope you feel better. Thank you. Okay, I'm kind of nervous. It's been a while. Okay.
Oh, you'll be fine, sweetheart.
Okay, so let's see. It's a long one, so I think I should read it only in one language. Let's see. Mon cœur vous parle, my heart speaks to you. And then let me tell you about this poem. I wrote it for all the natural disaster that happened recently all over the world. And it's very sad situation in so many countries. It really broke my heart and teared it. So that's why I wrote this poem. And so I should get just the two. Which one should I do? I can think. So I'm going to do the English and French. No one will understand. Like Laurent will understand the French. What about that? Okay. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mon cœur vous parle. My heart speaks to you. قلبي يتحدث إليكم. Let me do the French first and end in the English. This way everyone follow me. Quel jour lamentable, effroyable. Ô mère, ô père, aux enfants. Vos cœurs sont déchirés de tristesse. Vos corps affaiblis sont effrayés. Vos pleurs crient avec des sanglots, suppliants et perçants. Ils sont reçus par des âmes lointaines qui pleurent et prient pour vous, espérant avec effroi de chaque proche, de ces milliers de piliers de marbre et vivants. Les chercheurs ont trouvé des vivants, tristement des milliers de morts et de blessés. Rien n'est plus reconnaissable, rien que des débris. Vos douleurs sont inoubliables dans les cœurs de ceux qui savent aimer, pour qui ni race, ni foi, ni couleur importe. Que le bon Dieu vous envoie à vos côtés parmi ces bons êtres humains pour soulager vos flammes, que vos âmes palpitantes puissent, avec le temps, apaiser vos grandes douleurs, comme je voudrais poser des fleurs sur leur tombeau. What a dreadful sad day. Oh, mothers, fathers, children, your hearts are torn with sadness. Your weakened bodies are afraid. Your sobbing tears are crying out loud, piercing the distant heart. Receive them with sobbing cries, hoping with fear that every beloved one will be found alive beneath these thousands of marble pillars. Searchers hound living ones, sadly, they find thousands of dead and wounded ones. Nothing is more recognizable, nothing but debris. Unforgettable are your torments in the heart of those who know how to love. They don't care about race, creed, or color. May the Lord send you by your side among those kind souls to feel your flames, to feel your pain. May your palpitant souls with time ease your wounds. Or how I wish I can put flowers on their graves and just go on.
Now, Sala, you know, this is a beautiful tribute to everyone that is suffering from any type of tragedy, whether it's flooding or tornadoes, natural disasters, you know, especially with war-torn countries and these terrible earthquakes that have been happening. And, you know, you express yourself so beautifully here. You know, may the Lord send you by your side among those kind souls to feel your flames, to feel your pain, palpable souls with time erase your wounds. Oh, how I wish I can put flowers on their graves. You know, you have such a tender heart and you're such a tender poet. And, you know, this is such a beautiful poem that you've penned here. And I want to thank you for doing that, Sarwa.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really, it's just so sad. My heart, I can imagine the families that they have to go through. God help them. It's just such a sad situation. War, catastrophe, whatever it is, it's just unfortunate. But thank you. Touch my heart. Thank you.
Thank you. And Gray, what did you think of this tribute that Sawala has written?
You know, you've got such a kind heart, Sawala. It really shines through in this rite. You know, you can feel the devastation and the heartbreak throughout the rite. But, you know, your beauty shines through in your poem and your words. So great read as well. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Gray. Appreciate your kind words.
Thank you, Gray. And Laurent, what did you think of Sawala's poem?
I liked it a great deal, especially in the different languages. The first stanza, which addresses mothers, fathers, children, hearts are torn with sadness. Your weakened bodies are afraid. Your sobbing tears are crying out loud, piercing the distant hearts. He goes right to the family, because after all, we're all part of families. He takes the mothers, fathers, and children very simply and observes them almost from a distance that her heart is with them. And you can really see that in her words. Bravo, Sarah.
Merci, Laurent.
Thank you, Laurent.
Thank you for your, all of you.
Hold on. Move by we have one more commenter. We have one more commenter. Francisco, Frank. Hi, Frank.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome to the show.
Okay.
I would love to hear your comment on Sawala's poem before she leaves us.
Oh, Sawala, first of all, it's good to see you again, to hear you like that. I think this poem really epitomizes, it personifies, make that, every essence of what humanity should be like. We should be within brethren. We should be within ourselves together. You know, if we look at wars and we look at tragedies and Soviets and armies and things that are terrible, you know, we seem to not learn the lesson of what we should do. And this poem really reflects on, despite the sadness, the tragedy and all that, it does bring us thoughts as well. And this is something that's beautiful that we can think about such tragedies and hope to learn from them as well. So I thought you did a fantastic job on this book.
Thank you so much, Frank. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
I'm going to stay for one
okay.
And then go. I'm so sorry. I wish I could be hungry.
That's okay. I wanted to let you know that Kind Poet wrote in the group, "I can tell that you are sincerely heartbroken by the grief that the devastating natural disasters cause in this world. Your vivid words create clear imagery and a saddened tone in this poem." Amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Kind.
Oh, thank you so
thank
much,
you,
Kind
Poet.
Poet. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. We are ready for our next poem.
We have the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind reading that, Lawrence.
All right.
Can you announce it, Gray?
This is One by James Hatfield.
All right.
Thank you.
Here it is. One. Crystal clear is the breath exhaled into the cold spaces of loneliness, where even water droplets refuse to keep you company. Tranquil non-existence is what swallows your impotent sounds. You do not hear the scuff of your shuffling feet or the ramble of your self-chatter. Transparent and translucent is what you become to yourself. The you crowding in on you becomes too insubstantial to hold back the numbness. Modish placidity blends time, and perpetual solitariness bewilders cognition, and you are nothing, washed in nothing. End poem.
Oh, fantastic read, Laurent. And I really loved his imagery in here. And I would like to know what you think about the poem, Sawa.
It's very sad. I beautifully read. Laurent with so much emotion. I mean, just the title itself, One, that show already tell us what it's about. And crystal clear. When you hear the beginning, crystal clear, the breath exhaling into the cold space of loneliness. It's just so powerful. It's not only... It's physically, you can feel it physically, emotionally. It's affecting everything from the beginning. It's just that it says a lot, and how the conversion and imagery where even water droplets refuse to keep you company. How sad is that? Just the start itself and keep going, transparent. And so that you use imagery that can be like beauty. But here you see the sadness, the loneliness, the how it's really affecting him. And it's so vivid and so clear and so transparent in front of our eyes as we can feel it ourselves. And how many people go through this in our life? We all somehow, at some point of life, we went through this loneliness. So we can find ourselves in this. It's quite sad, but beautifully expressed.
Great. You know, he was inspired, and, you know, we get inspired by so many things, but this, he was inspired by a poet, Mephitic ID Synergy, and I thought that he did, like, agreed with everything you said. You know, you can just feel the loneliness here, that heaviness, especially, you know, when he's talking. Transparent and translucent is what you've become to yourself. The you crowding in on you becomes too insubstantial to hold back the numbness. You know, the hollowness, and sometimes people cannot see what they're doing while others are watching. And I thought that this was a powerful write that you wrote, and I really enjoyed your comment, Sawa. And Frank, what did you think?
I thought the poem was very powerful. Very sad, very vivid, but at the same time, it depicts humanity. You know, going through these signs of depression, loneliness can be terrible. And the one thing that one should learn about this, the one thing we should learn about it is to understand the needs of others as well as our own.
Agreed. Wonderful comment. Thank you so much. And what did you think about the poem, Gray?
Yeah, you know, it was heart-wrenchingly beautiful. You did okay. You did a great job reading it, Lauren. But, you know, he really puts forward the oneness of existing, you know, how depressing that can be. Transparent and translucent is what you become to yourself. The you crowding in on you becomes too insubstantial to hold back the numbness. Yeah, just haunting.
Agreed. Thank you, Gray. And Laurent, you did a fabulous job in reading James's front page pick. Congratulations. I would love to know your thoughts on your read.
The poem is kind of metaphysical from the point of view of tranquil non-existence. If you lead a life that is so quiet and so unengaged, if you find yourself in a society where you don't seem to count, where nobody mm-hmm. likes you or no one knows you because you kind of withdraw, you become very, very thin. And as the poet says, after a while, you become transparent and translucent. And there's really nothing left after a moment. Voidish placidity blends time, perpetual solitariness, bewilders cognition. There's something there to think about. Because you're so alone that you end up being awash in nothing. You are nothing, awash in nothing. Very, very contemplative, as somebody said, poem.
Great. Excellent poet. Excellent point. I'm sorry. thank you, Laurent. And Sawa, I know you can only stay for a short time, but Gray Eyes, sorry, Gray, I don't mean to jump the boat. They're blue to you as a female poet, and I would like to know if you would like to read a poem. Hopefully we can sneak it in there. Would you like to read her poem?
Oh, you're talking about to me? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I can read it. I can read it, and then, yes, I can do that if you like. Yes.
Yeah, Gray, can you announce it?
So we have The Old Town by Blue to You.
Okay. The Old Town by Blue to You. There was once mm-hmm. a building in the old town where everyone came to talk and to buy. It always smelled of ripe bananas and bakery. Feet shuffled in the creaky wooden floor. Wheels did for oil without receiving. Their silver basket always full and slow. I will feed the flower with my 10-year-old bare feet, looking as far as my little blue eyes could see, while my mouth tasted every good thing with its eyes. Those shells have been gone now for decades, everything brought up and devoured so long ago, except the item that still lined the shelves in my mind. The kid that owned the banana house on Main Street across from the sale barn in a small southeastern town in Indiana. End of poem.
Oh, you
there
did.
Was a store in town. Sorry, can I read? Just
mm-hmm. read. Yes, please read out this note.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There was a store in town that lasted decades, but closed when a bigger chain store opened back in the early 60s. Found memories to carry the smell of bananas. The store was called the Banana House, but it carried everything.
Okay, no, that's okay. You did a beautiful read of this, you know, memories that just take you back to older times when there weren't these big, huge chain stores, but these mom-and-pop eateries and these little corner stores that, you know, you would just, you know, you wouldn't even have shoes on. You know, you could go in barefooted and, you know, pick candy and pick fruit and vegetables. You know, that's what I remember from my grandmother going, her giving me some money. It was just so funny, you know. I remember when a quarter was a lot of money, and you could go into the little stores and they would give you a brown paper bag, and you could put all your penny candies inside of it. You know,
you know, then just smelling fresh fruit in the air. And, you know, for me, it was chile, poblano chiles, long green chiles. You know, you would just smell all those scents, you know. They would have hard, oh, my goodness, I can't remember the name of it, but it was hard, like cinnamon, and it was like a rock, and, you know, they would use it to cook with, to make mole and stuff, and, you know, oatmeal, and, you know, all these different things. And right here, you know, this she made me smile, but then the next stanza made my heart kind of ache for those times. I still feel the floor with my 10-year-old bare feet, looking as far as my little blue eyes could see, while my mouth tasted every good thing with its eyes. These shells have been gone now for a decade. Everything brought up and devoured so long ago, except the items that still line the shelves in my mind. And, you know, that is, you know, something, you know, that a poet that is able to write with her words, where you can feel and taste and smell and, you know, just remember old memories. And I want to congratulate her on her front page pick for all the memories that she brought back. And you did such a beautiful read, Sawa. I enjoyed it so much. And
thank you,
Gray Eyes. And congratulations, Blue, to your front page pick. What did you think, Gray?
Well, I thought you did a beautiful read about that, Sawa. And, you know, it's such a nostalgic piece. You could feel the memories come alive.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just fantastic memories of being a child with all this wondrous stuff surrounding you, and you just want a piece of it all. I mean, you know, I can remember being a little kid in the grocery store wishing I could have something off of every shelf in there, too. So it took me back.
That's funny.
Thank you, Gray. Fantastic comment. And Laurent, I would like to know your thoughts.
I like the way that the small iconoclastic store is celebrated in this poem. When small stores shut and big stores take over, you lose the human touch, the one-on-one contact, the generational familiarity that a neighborhood store will encourage, and it's a real shame. But what is not a shame is the way that this memory is built from talking about Old Town to the specific place in Old Town that draws the memory, the banana store, the banana house, because it's a charming name. I mean, you can't beat that. And, you know, small southeastern town in Indiana, we're talking about pure Americana here. And that's exactly what I get from it. Well done.
And I really like the point you brought out, Laurent, about that human touch where people recognized your face and knew your name. No, you're absolutely right. Wonderful comment, Laurent. Thank you. And Frank?
Well, this made me think about my trip when I was up there in Chicago. I saw all these small little shops out there, and it really just took me down memory lane as well when I grew up on bazaars. This was just a fantastic poem. It encompassed the memories of good memories. And it's sad to think that these type of shops or stores no longer exist. But they've kept alive within us. So I thought the poem overall was an excellent write.
I agree. You know, the open market. You know, you know, it's just, you know, like when I was in Germany and when I was in deep in Mexico. You know, you just all those old memories. And Sawa, thank you, Frank. And Sawa, you did such a beautiful read. I would like to know what you thought of the poem you read.
At first, I have to say those two stanzas that you pick are smiling. Those exactly what I got my attention to the most. But the whole thing, like, you know, when you, there's something that, especially the smell and the taste stay with us in memory. Of course, so many other things, but she brought them alive. How the, like, I almost can smell the banana bread now in my, and want to taste it. Like, everyone knows the taste of banana bread. it just brings this memory back. Even for us, we kind of can know what's the smell of banana bread. And there is this memory that you wish you can never die. And that's what she put there. She said, everything is devoured, but those memories shelves in my mind. There's things that we never forget the rest of our lives. How she feel at 10 years old, even the sound of the floor when she was walking. So there's always these memories, the beautiful memories that remain with us in our mind. Just beautifully said and beautifully shared. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Salwa. And you did a beautiful review and comment.
And I love you, and I wish I could stay longer, whole thing. And
that's okay
to, get up early. It was
we were happy to have
all
you.
And I hope I'll do this again. And thank you so much for having me. Mm-hmm. Good night, everyone.
Yeah. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Au revoir.
Bye-bye.
Au revoir. Bye-bye.
Okay. We are ready for our next poem.
Okay, so we have Horse of a Different Color by Keith Paltrop. If you wouldn't mind reading that, please, Frank.
I'll give a start at this. I noon down in dusty Durango with two gunslingers fixing to tango. The sheriff draws first at a cuff clearly cursed, but his head is an orange as a mango. End of poem.
That was a great read, Frank. I love the rhyme of this. It's funny. When you hear words, you know, like I see them written in English, but I hear my grandmother, my mother's tongue. Can you say Durango in the way it's supposed to be pronounced?
Durango.
Yeah.
Durango.
And I would love to know what you thought about this poem, Gray. Yeah, excellent,
I thought it was
Frank.
A fantastic brevity. You did a great job reading it, Frank. But it was short, sweet, and to the point. At a cusp clearly cursed, for his head was as orange as a mango. Great.
Thank you, Gray. And how about you, Laurent?
There are not that many quote-unquote gunslingers who are as orange as a mango. As a matter of fact, I can only think of one, and he is a cuss, clearly cursed. Very clever right there, Keith.
I'm going to read a comment that Keith wrote. The wood of the mango tree is an interesting hardwood. It reminds me of the myrtle wood, but it is much less rare, and it can be had in large slabs. It is clear, now here's his thoughts, I wonder if this is what he wrote it to, that the sheriff is the Jack Smith, and the Mongo-headed outlaw is the former commander-in-chief. I am a bit shocked that Kevin would allow this blatantly political piece to be fixtured. Features. I have got to say, I found this thoroughly entertaining, and now that I understand the orange-headed who hit his, that is a riot. I've got to say, I enjoyed that. And what did you think, Frank?
Well, I'm not going to touch the mango. The mango is going to burst. But I will tell you really quick, I was thinking beforehand of the Clint Eastwood here, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
The poem was brief, but it was entertaining.
Oh, yes, it was. And what did you think, Laurent? And that's my printer going off, so I cannot control it. Excuse me.
No, that's okay. I'll shoot it
I
there.
I think you already asked me, will you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Uh-oh. That's what happens when you don't have your notebook and you're not making a list. Okay. All right. Keep me in line, Laurent.
And thank you so much. Congratulations on your front page pick, Keith. And excellent read, Frank. And we're back to you, Gray.
Okay, so next we have Head Held High by Teresa Streshenkov. If you would give that a read, will you, please?
Okay, I'll do my best. Head Held High by Teresa Streshenkov. And she was in collaboration with Unwittingly Fantast. The banners around you may seem like they cannot be climbed, but even the knees shaking, you can find your footing sure. Though faithless, find your solace in the love that you are shown. With tiny steps and moments past, you'll see you can endure. Keep your chin up and your head held high. Always try to push through, for tomorrow's day is all new. Never give up hope. Life is forever changing. Just go with the flow, fighting through all the highs and lows. Joy is always fleeting, but the sorrows too shall pass. The darkness of the storm shall shine a light on what is true. The sunlight's warmth is warmer when you're used to bitter cold. Stay grateful for the cruelty from which you surely grew. Always putting one foot in front of the other, so even when you trip and fall, stand your ground big and tall. Pick yourself back up and brush off those knees, not having your back against the wall. End poem. Fantastic collaboration with, you know, thinking of the things that are important, that life can kick us and bring us down. And I like where she said, joy is always fleeting, but the sorrows too shall pass. The darkness of the storm will shine a light on what's true. You know, for us to always remember, if we have gone through some pain and some cruel times, that, you know, that's what builds fortitude and helps us for our next battle as it strengthens us. So I really enjoyed this collaboration. Thank you. Congratulations on your front page pick. Gray, what did you think of the poem?
I enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed the message that was, you know, throughout the poem of standing up after you fall, you know, keeping your back straight and tall. You know, no matter what life brings, always got to get back up and continue the fight. So, yeah, it was a beautiful message throughout the poem. You did a beautiful job of reading it.
Thank you, Gray. And what did you think of the poem, Laurent?
Well, the love that you are shown is, I kind of think, is the key, because that seems to be the one thing that everybody can fall back on. Something that's going to help. The message here is persistence. You fail 1,000 times and then you finally succeed, but you have to fail before you succeed. Edison, for instance, failed 1,000 times. Then all of a sudden, one day, he had the light bulb. It just takes persistence. I like the way she says it. I mean, she's basically using aphorisms, but they're well-voiced, and they're particularly germane. You know, put one foot in front of the other, and you trip and fall, stand the ground, big and tall. Well done, and I like its positive attitude.
And great comment, all right. And Frank, I would like to know your thoughts,
yes,
on Teresa's poem.
I'm going to echo the same sentiments here. Very inspirational and very effective in the message here. Overall, fantastic, right?
Thank you. And we're back to you, Gray.
Okay, so next we have Let Them by Ursula Macaub. And we don't have another female voice, so I will give this a read. Let Them.
Just make sure your pitch is a little higher, Gray.
Yeah, we could do.
Come on,
Let
honey.
Them. My neighbors think I'm amazing. Let Them.
No.
Dandelions are now deep pods. They send the next generation of princes and princesses on the fur coats of our dogs. Let them. Roses spill peach and yellow to frame my window. Their stems have enough stamina to last through the season. Let them. An errant breeze flutters the leaves of yellow bamboo from her corner. I tell her everyone's secrets, and she has a few for me, too. Every plant in my backyard returns my affection. Let them. End poem.
That was, you know, wonderfully read. I really enjoyed this poem by Ursula. I love her imagery. Everything here, you know, it talks about our neighbors. And, you know, it talks about how we live our own lives, and does it really bother you that that the sunflowers are beautifully open wide, and you also are the same with your, you know, digging and gardening and your little dogs and, you know, just setting for the future and just enjoying it. I love her colors and her metaphors in here. It just lifts your spirit, and I enjoyed this very much. How hard we work in our friendships or our gardens, that'll always flourish and flower for us. What did you think, Gray? And you said good to read, even though you didn't do it in a higher pitch.
I loved it. You know, it speaks to the beauty that the yard can bring to you. But your neighbors not so much. I mean, the neighbors think I'm nosy. Let them. And dandelions are now seed pods, and they send the next generation of princesses and princes on the fur coats of our dogs. Let them. I liked it. I liked the title, and I liked the context of the poem. So great job.
Thank you. And how about you, Laurent?
The phrase, let them, is almost like a punctuation mark where it goes before. And it also ties everything together nicely. The act of observing what something in the garden is doing in the phrase, let them, is kind of a blind encouragement. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't reach out and change the whole garden. So whatever they're going to do, they're going to do. Let them. Luckily, the things they do are beautiful. And you can't beat a good garden, I guess. Lovely piece.
No, I have a garden, and my neighbors across the street, they just it looks so bad. It's just weeds growing everywhere, grass going everywhere, dead holes everywhere. So I fixed it by putting up large hedges of flowers and hanging beautiful tulips that hang down and sway and chime. And I don't have to look at your yard. I built a fortress just so I wouldn't have to look at it. Oh my gosh, it's a horrible yard. And thank you, Laurent. And what did you think, Frank?
Well, I'm not going to get into neighbors here, but I will discuss the issue here: how much we relate to nature, and how much we enjoy the flowers in this case in our gardens. And I thought overall the imagery was striking. And I enjoyed the whole poetry because it's very, very much, very sincere in message.
Great. Thank you, everybody. And congratulations on your front page pick, Ursula. And now we're ready for our next one, Greg.
Okay, so next we have Futo Id No Regrets by Laurent Yvonne. If you wouldn't mind reading that, please, Laurent.
All right. This is written to prompt the following prompt. How merciful a thing is man's ignorance of his immediate future. What a ghastly, paralyzing thing it would have been if all those present could have known what was about to happen within a matter of seconds, or nothing short of pre-knowledge could have stopped the occurrence. So suddenly it sprang upon them. And Futuro Id No Regrets. The audience sat with the stillness of ancient gravestones slumped and set in the earth. 100 pairs of youthful eyes fixed on him, neither animosity or welcome reflected in the intenseness of stares so lacking in interest. Rather, the stricture of impending boredom had limited their postures to a single frozen position of animal comfort allowed by the old school's hard oak benches. A line of lofty windows mantled in dust and cobwebs permitted the pallid afternoon light to wash across the lecture hall. Children of the village's bright carvers sat in uneven rows to his left, the progeny of the castle's many inhabitants to his right. His lectern was mounted on a large dais, so that he appeared to tower over the students before him, like a preacher delivering a homily on the fruits of learning, preparing to unleash the masters of poetry on a flock of silent ravens, uncertainly balanced on a flat line. Dull genitors bred dull offspring. Imagination died at the hands of hide-bound tradition. Not a spark among them, he surmised. Spreading his arms wide, he encompassed the room with his gaze, calling on a volunteer to read the first poem. Not a sound, not the slightest motion stirred in the herd of bland faces. As if a still life painting had substituted itself for the living panorama of disinterest before him. The little pricks, he thought to himself, stunted runts of twisted mental stuff. They need awakening, a raw verb or two, an explicit noun. Lesson plan of the day discarded, he exclaimed loudly, the hard K reverberating like hammered metal off the room's stone walls. The silence changed. The room immediately charged with energy. A ripple of interest spread through suddenly shifting postures, aware of the forbidden being voiced. Fuck, he repeated, more loudly this time, jerking the last head upwards from an ill-timed doze. To have sexual intercourse with, a word omitted by your English dictionary as taboo until just recently, making it difficult to trace in usage. The word apparently is used in a scandalous 15th century poem titled Flen Fliss, Fleas, Flies, and Friars, written in corrupted Latin and Middle English. It reads in part, Non stunt in celi, e fucante uius of heli. The monks are not in heaven because they fuck the wives of the town of Eli. The ravens commenced chattering loudly between themselves, repeating the forbidden word over and over, louder and louder, until the profanity became less a vulgarism and more a sound without meaning. Never had fuck ran out so loudly or so proudly, the intensity of the obscenity matching the peal of a large bell ringing out over the countryside. The students were liberated, freed from the constrictions of their conservative society, howling the word as they leapt upwards with each new shouting, at which point the hall's large wooden doors burst open, led by the grizzled headmaster, and, most significantly, by the master of arms, clutching leg iron, leg chains. Probably better not to have, he thought. But there was no premeditation to this moment. It had sprung on him in the instant, and if he had considered the consequences. The insane screeching of the headmaster in his ears grew into an odd kind of music. Echoes of the student's exclamations served as lyrics to the harsh melody of spume issuing from the florid and hateful face before him. Fuck, he thought, and turning to his students, yelled, fuck, it also means not to care. Amazingly, in one voice, they shouted back, fuck it, He was able to smile as they forcefully ejected him from the melee of voices that continued the chant well past the time he found himself confined in a nearby unused chill id, he thought. Okay. No regrets. End quote.
I have got to say, you are a fabulous storyteller. I'm just curious, and because I was reading in your author's notes that this is based on a true life experiment by my father trying to rouse interest in English to a student at a high school in the Bronx. I know you're saying this is imaginative, but your father, I believe, did he really teach them that out of curiosity?
Well, the stories are true, yeah. True story. I just adapted it for the sake of the contest.
Well, I have all of us have been students, and, some teachers can just put you to sleep, even though you've had a great night of sleep. And then there's those teachers that are just, they have that fire in them that instills wanting to learn in their students. And, this is just fantastic. Now, this just tells me something about yourself, where you got your talent from your father. And it is preparing to unleash the masters of poetry on a flock of silent ravens, and certainly balanced on its slack line. Your imagery is just fabulous. It's fantastic. The more I kept hearing you read, the more I wanted to hear you read and hear you read more about your father, and then just the way, that you describe these students, not a spark among them, he surmised. Spreading his arms wide, he encompassed the room with his gaze, calling on a volunteer to read the first poem. And then I just started laughing because some kids are just asses. I hate to say this, you can't sometimes when I would have to talk to a parent about a child and their behavior, I found out where the children learned to be pricks. It was their parents. The little pricks, he thought to himself, strutted once on twisted mental stock. They need awakening, a raw verb or two, an explicit noun. I have got to say, oh, my God, this is one of my favorite poems that you've ever written, Laurent. I enjoyed it from the first couplet all the way down to the end. Your dad didn't lose his job, did he?
I'm sorry, what?
Your dad didn't get in trouble for this, did he?
No, he was teaching in the Bronx, for Christ's sake, at that point. And he had a bunch of motorcycle toughs in his English class who could care less about English, so he had to figure out a way to get their attention. And by golly, he did, and they ended up enjoying it.
Well, I enjoyed it, too. Thank you, Laurent. And Gray, what do you think of this poem of Laurent?
An engaging story. I mean, it's you could picture yourself being one of those students and having this go on around you, just shock and awe, waking you up out of that humdrum of existence that you had before hearing your teacher yell, fuck, and then again, fuck. And I enjoyed your translation of it, Futu Id, I thought. He thought, fuck it, no regrets. But yeah, you had an amazing father who really knows how to grab attention and take hold of a sleepy class. So excellent, right, and great storytelling and reading.
Thank you.
I just wanted to, where your father was talking about the apparently used and scandalous 15th century poem. I sometimes, when I watch movies that are documentaries of the past, and I would hear them use that word,
F-U-C-K. And I was wondering, did they really use that word back in the 15th century? And I've done a little bit of research, and I haven't really found anything. But I want to thank you, Laurent, for educating me on the word.
You're welcome. I can say some at this point, but I'm much too much of a gentleman.
Well, I can tell you my eyes were as big as a 13-year-old. And Frank, what did you think of Laurent's storytelling?
Well, yeah, this was a very, very, this was a very great piece, you know. I know some of this is based on actual experience. Some of it, from what I read as well, was actually something that Laurent added. But this was an incredible story. I agree with what has been said before. You know, teaching, I've done some teaching myself. You have to find the proper way of teaching children or even adults nowadays because they get so bored. And, you know, you've got so much competition with the internet, phone. So it's remarkable even that in that time period that your father was able to convey, you know, although he didn't plan it, but he did convey interest in these students here. And lastly, another thing, I thought the poem was just remarkable with detail. And Laurent, my friend, I don't think I'll be thinking of monks in the same way after this. And I don't know about the town of Ely, but it must sound interesting to go visit.
Thank you, Frank. I do recommend the Gourmandgast Trilogy to anybody who likes to read because it's a remarkable work.
Well, appreciate it.
Thank you, Laurent. Thank you, Frank. And again, congratulations on your front page pick, Laurent, and fabulous storytelling. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Graham?
Okay, so we have You Live in a Shoebox Zone by Betty Upchurch. Becky Upchurch, if you wouldn't mind giving that a read, please.
Okay. You Live in a Shoebox Zone by Becky Upchurch. Two birds were chasing each other through limbs and leaves of the maple tree. I thought to myself, surely they will remember this day when suddenly a flash of long ago moment came to me. When the pond sparkled and danced as we ran around its banks, both of us 17, real fun and in love, not the Capulet or the Montague type of love, never awful. But clouds grew gray and full, winds blew our hair like the wild manes of shires, running free. You the bay, me the black. We ran toward a lee side of the make-believe ship. You called your roomy truck, laughing. Today, reality is sunny and quiet. A memorable day and a solemn moment leads me to my shoebox, where the memory of you yellows in response on pages written to me. Every time I open this box, I see you in another dimension, but always I see us 17 and laughing. Oh my goodness, what a beautiful poem by Becky. And congratulations on her front page pick. Let's get some comments, Gray Height.
You did a beautiful read of that, Lydia, but I enjoyed the poem. You know, it was filled with incredible imagery and emotions throughout the write, and, you know, that's talent for sure. So a great job, Becky, and excellent read, Lydia.
Thank you. And what did you think, Laurent?
I've always liked Becky Upchurch's poetry. She doesn't seem to miss a beat. And look at this one. both of us 17, real fun and in love, not the Capulet or the Montague type of love, never awful. I love the reference to Shakespeare and Romeo and Juliet. That works for me because it's so well known. But clouds grew gray and full, winds blew our hair like the wild manes of shires running free, you the bay, me the black. It's wonderfully written. And the metaphor of the shoebox and that last line where I always see you, excuse me, I see us, mm-hmm. 17 and laughing. It's not a long poem, but boy, it packs an emotional punch because of the way she constructed this from the beginning of the two birds and then moving into the memory and the shoebox. It's very nicely done. This is a real class act.
Green. Thank you, Laurent. Wonderful comment. And how about you, Francisco?
Yes, I thought the imagery was very extoneous, very, very vivid. It had wonderful, wonderful portions of this poem that really brought back reflection upon me. You know, you always think about things as you grow up, and you think about things that are attached to your childhood memories. And to go back to a shoebox there, that really is very much in depth. It really shows the profound nature of what her thoughts were, how they reflected that, and what else was encompassed beyond that.
Mm-hmm. And great, you know, for me, you know, she brought back vivid, heartfelt, emotional memories that, you know, just touches us all, going back to being a teenager. And, you know, and it was just her just seeing these little two birds chasing each other through the limbs and leaves. And then she said that just trickled a memory when she was younger of being forever 17 and laughing, you know, getting in that roomy truck and chasing each other. And, you know, she looks in the shoebox and she sees, you know, those letters and notes he's written. And, you know, it's as if you live it all over again, as if time hasn't stopped. And, you know, these just, you know, it's a sad memory, but at the same time, it's a wonderful memory that she'll always treasure. And congratulations, not only on your front page pick, Becky, but also your Silver Medal. Thank you. Oh, my goodness, I got twisted tongue tonight. Okay, back to you, Greg.
Okay, so next we have Analyzing What Is, Observing What Is Almost Not by T-Ink Poem, if you mind playing that SoundCloud.
Greg, you're the one that usually does that because this writing is so small. I can't see it,
okay.
So hold on. If you can do it for me, please do it. And if you can't, I'll do it. Okay.
No, you got it. Okay.
Analyzing what is, observing what is almost not. Wonder what it's like to try a new persona, one that I can own for a single moment, a morphology. Change like old socks, underwear that begins to squeak, my voice soft and vacant. The bottom of an open drawer lined with patterned wallpaper, ivy leaves and horned poppy in a stream bubbling consciousness. Uncertain words like those that flow in a gush as wing-tipped birds miss their meaning. Metaphors absurdity, bunched flight and murmur. Standing in one for another, arc of a bow, rustle of taffeta, curve of periopera, sweep of Vatican stairs, Dome of St. Paul's, sharp soaring vaults, underground Parliament Square, the roof of my mouth after lime juice, salt and tequila, billowing duvet into the cover as it floats, refusing to fill, meditation bowl echo fades deep into the future, the tincture of cloves to a tooth. Learning to drive in London, the instructor urged, only pay attention to the car in front, everything else will follow. Starlings in flight, as the jams flow flood tide around the circus and down Piccadilly. Everything a clue or a message, a pointer to God and the angels, a matrix of solutions, tail feather to desire, the fleckled speckle of iridescence there in a voice. We dance as one material. We billow as sail, tie knots in the universe, stretch like gum, snap back a balloon to a thumb, or the arc of a dying rainbow.
I've got to say, she is a beautiful reader. You know, she had entered a contest, Murmuration by Incoherent Dust, and she says that my brother Billy, 12, and I were discussing the word murmuration, which is when a flock of starlings sweep and swirl in coordinated movements, much like a school of fish across the sky. And I thought that she did this so beautifully. You know, she took us to that moment where we see the starlings just flying and moving like water fish in the ocean. And, you know, she brought those memories to me. I really love the stanza where, you know, she takes us to where she is, and we can follow along with her. Learning to drive in London, the instructor urged, only pay attention to the car in front. Everything else will follow. Starlings in flight, as the jams flood, blood tide around circus and down Piccadilly. Oh, what a gorgeous poem by T. E. Holm. What did you think about this poem, Gray?
I thought it was beautiful. I mean, you know, she really captures the essence of murmuration quite beautifully. I enjoyed the starlings, you know, because when you watch starlings and how they fly, it's amazing. They don't crash into each other and just start falling out of the sky from their accidents, because they're so tight-packed and so fluid in their movement that, you know, you kind of get that image from this rite. So I thought it was a palpable rite, very well done, excellent read on it as well. Great job.
Thank you. And great. Thank you, Greg. Great comment. And how about you, Laurent?
Yeah, there's a chaos of emotions going on in this poem. It's almost transcendental. It has layers, and you know, if you bother to peel them back, there's so many references to things. The poet uses emotions through what he writes. It's not really constructed or written the way a normal poem might be, because, for instance, standing in for another arc of a bow, rustle of taffeta, curve of Paris opera, sweep of the Vatican stairs, dome of St. Paul's, he's giving us various architectural structures, chart, soaring vaults, underground Parliament Square, the roof of my mouth, lime juice, salt, and tequila. How he moves from Parliament Square to the roof of his mouth is genius, but it really, really works. As he follows that up with billowing duvet into the cover that floats, refusing to fill, he moves right into the bed, and then talks about a meditation bowl, tincture of clothes to a tooth. So all of a sudden we have a toothache, and we have meditation, and it's called murmuration. So really all these little things that he mentions, everything that he gets alludes to, is a general murmuration, a little bit like a laugh soundtrack to a show or something of that nature that accents the main sequence of things, whatever is going on. It's really pretty remarkable. I had to read it twice, a little uncertain as to a lot of the meanings, but I could see what the poet was trying to do in this, and it's quite brilliant.
Great. Thank you, Laurent. Excellent comment. And how about you, Frank?
Yes, and I agree with what's been said here, but I like the whole notion of the observation here, being able to observe all these things that encompass all these things that are around you. You know, all this, the analogy here, the terminology here, and the images that are imposed here, really bring us a picture of what, you know, the moment can capture, you know, the moment can captivate us, you know, when we are in that moment. And I thought that the poem overall had just very, very, very intriguing imagery throughout the poem. Fantastic, right?
Oh, man, just fantastic poetry, fantastic comments. And so we are now into open poetry in our second hour. Gray, I see that you have a poem up by Kiku. So since you already posted that, let's just go ahead and get that read, and then we'll start in open poetry, please.
Okay, I think Kiku is a woman, so if you wouldn't mind reading that, Leah, please.
Mm-hmm. Sundays by Kiku. It would be on a quiet day like this, a typical Sunday for brunch and tea, them some on North Lamar and Ferguson, with the nail of a carpenter's pencil, you check boxes, my small wish list. Two, shumai. Two, hargrove. One, radish cake. We couldn't forget the egg tarts either. Then we take the city bus home. Later, at the last stop, I saw an older couple at the depot and thought they looked like us, though they were arriving or departing. You were parcelogenic, out before the sun, bright-eyed smile between dark fringes. The September night tasted like plum. Its sunsets like peel satsuma as we walked the rest of the way through the dimly lit streets where drivers would mistake us for lovers in poem. What a beautiful, gorgeous poem. I see that she got a silver medal. Congratulations on that, Kiku, and your front page pick. And let's get some comments. Gray Eyes?
I liked it. You know, I mean, the last line really got me because, I mean, this reads as if it was two lovers, you know, sharing a date night or something as of such. But, you know, it was definitely enjoyable, engaging throughout, and well told. So great read, Lee.
Thank you. And Laurent?
Yeah, I like this a great deal. It's an observational poem, reflective. It would be on quiet days like this, a typical Sunday for brunch and tea, dim sum on North Lamar and Ferguson with the nail of a carpenter's pencil. In making these memories, Kiku describes an older couple in Vibo and thought they looked like us, so they were arriving or departing. Comparisons of relationships, and it's easy to be lovers in a bright day, but those September nights, which taste like plum and sunsets like peeled satsumas, is remarkably well written. The last line, where drivers would mistake us for lovers, the neat little ending that ties it all together.
Mm-hmm. Great. You know, and there's dim sum is delicious. Those steamed buns with, you know, that you get with barbecue pork. You know, and I was just looking at her comments, and, you know, she says that, you know, this was a friend, and you know how she brings out it sometimes when you're with friends, somebody that you love, a loving friendship, that you wish that it could be more. And you know how you spend the day in each lunch together, and it's just a beautiful day where you've shared this together. And, you know, where she looked at this couple, you know, hoping that possibly, you know, that it looked like them, and then one day hoping that it could be more.
this was beautiful. The imagery of this day was just gorgeous. And like, I like the comment, the line that Marat read, the summer night tasted like plum. Its sunsets like hill Satsuma. I just thought her imagery was just gorgeous. Thank you, Laurent. And how about you, Frank?
Well, I'm gonna agree. I think the imagery of a war was what pulled me in. I thought the whole notion of this poem really depicted, you know, what beautiful, you know, nights can represent, and how we encompass Mother Nature with our, you know, whether it be a lover or just a friend, how in itself, how we gel with that, you know, how we're able to to cohabitate together.
Great. Thank you, Frank. And we're back to you, Gray.
Okay, so next up we have The Poet by Lawrence 67. If you wouldn't mind reading that, Lawrence, please.
All right. The Poet. You know, there's nothing to compare the feeling you get when you scribe a masterpiece, at least in your eyes. Try to look at it from a different point of view. But there it still is. There's nothing left to do. So it's off to who is who to get your poetic due and to see if indeed you have a poetic fescue of seed. You arrive at the All Poetry Station ready to alert the nation, to be ready to accept this poetic creation. Submit it, wait with anticipation. Will it be received the way that it is intended? Can I make plans to go to the last dance, waiting anxiously for the reviews? Certainly, there may be a bad one or two. What are you going to do? Here it comes, the first report. What? What the hell was that? Certainly not English. Next, please. Huh? I don't understand. That comment made absolutely no sense. It was totally generic. And subscribe. Well, the rest for sure. What? What do you mean that's it? Do you know the effort that it took to make it, huh? Get a line? Where does the line start? Behind you? Oh, okay. And
you did a fabulous read, Laurent, on Lawrence's poem, you know, The Poet, you know, and it's just, you know, when you actually take the time to write something, to a picture or to a quote or something that you see out in nature, what's going on around you, and then you get these comments, you know, like, what? Or, you know, what are you talking about? Like, how did you get that out of that? You know, and then you get the generic comments, oh, great poem, you know, that's it. You know, and then he, you know, really says what he means after you take the time to write something. And I really loved the inflections in your voice when you read this. I am smiling so big right now. What do you mean that's it? Do you know the effort that it took to make it, huh? In line. Where does that line start? Behind you. Oh, okay. You know, and I just, I loved his rhyme through here, you know, to be ready to accept this poetic creation, submit it with anticipation, will it be received the way that it was intended? Yeah, you know, and his imagery is just fabulous here. I really, really enjoyed the satire from Lawrence. He's something else. And you did such a fabulous read on this, Laurent. I would like to know your thoughts.
Well, it certainly is a commentary on some of the comments we get sometimes. And I'll tell you, there have been times when people have commented on the poems, and I sit there and I go, first of all, did he actually read it? Or did she actually read it? Did she understand it? Apparently not. What does that mean? Well, good Lord. And some of the comments are beautiful. and most of them are really good karmas. But occasionally you get some that are skewed completely sideways. You really wonder what the hell is going on. Is this not to be appreciated? I found it charming in its naive innocence that everybody mm-hmm. is going to comment on your poem if they like it. And the actual matter is that many people will read it and they'll like it, but never leave a comment. I don't know whether it's laziness or not, but it happens all the time.
Yes, it does. I was just reading a comment from one of the people, and his name is Kurt B. It seems sometimes people don't get what you say, even if it's expressed in a logical way. So you just carry on and do what you do and hope that the majority understands you. And then Lawrence writes him back, "That's what I'm talking about. But it seems that nobody gets me, with the exception of my buddy Kurt B." Oh, that was hilarious. Well, at least it tickled my funny bone, so. What did you think, Gray?
Well, I mean, this is the day in the life of an AP poet. You know, you write something, you hope it's a masterpiece, you think it's a masterpiece, but then you get no comment on it, and no likes, and no response. Wonder, what the hell, you know. Yeah, crickets. But, you know, so I thought it was fantastic. You know, I like the humor in it as well. Lawrence always has some sort of sarcastic humor in his writes. So, great job.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent, Lawrence.
And I would like to know what you think, Frank.
Well, you know, I like the satire, the wit in this poem here. You know, he's always using that for his poetry, and he does a fantastic job of doing that. And I do agree with what you're saying. Yeah. I think as poets, allknowpoetry.com, you know, we spend time, effort, you know, to share our poetry. At least people who are on the web, allknowpoetry.com, could do the same, and their commentary as well. But I thought overall it was a fantastic poem.
Great. Thank you, everyone. And we're back to you, Gray.
Okay, so next up we have Trigger My Soul by Hope Soul. If you would mind reading that, Lee, please.
It'd be my honor. Sugar My Soul by Hope Soul. The parts of me wish salt your skin, adds Hispanic flavor to deep set amour. In your eyes, depths of my soul dive deeper in your iris. Far beyond shallow, I lick and live in marrow, tapping each of your ribs, listening to stars glitter echoes, your death's softly sugars, paper skin where I melt into you, wine cellar. Places made whole once they locked lips with the maker. Warm rosemary bread fresh from the oven. Bakers bake by the dozen, keeping biscuits warm under the quilt. Bellies pressed together gently, crushing purple ripe grapes. Blending together mead, honey drink. Tongues the pollen flower where homestead brings. Whatever blossoms from your pores is where my roots took soil, squeeze the droplets. At midnight, they taste like spring in poem.
Oh, what a beautiful poem, Hope. What did you think about this poem, Gray?
Well, you know, I really like the correlation between food and the body. The part of me which salt your skin adds Hispanic flavor to deep set amour. I mean, that's just beautiful right there. And then whatever blossoms from your pores is where my roots took soil. Squeeze the droplets at midnight. He tastes like spring. Yeah, just a beautiful poem. Excellent read as well to you.
Thank you. And I would like to know your thoughts, Lorette.
Yeah, the tapping each of your ribs, listening to stars' glitter echoes, their dust softly sugars, paper skin where I melt into your wine cellar. The metaphors in this all the way through the wine, the bakers, well done, especially as it moves right into bellies pressed together gently, crushing purple ripe grapes, blending together mead, honey, drink. They're all got to be creative when you make bread. You've got to be creative when you are in a wine cellar. There's a lot of opportunity for interesting things in places like that. At midnight, he tastes like spring. One of the great lines, I think, I really do, because, you know, we've always heard a lot of erotic poetry, a lot of passionate poetry, but at midnight, he tastes like spring. It seems to me it would not have been out of place in the middle of a poem, but have it at the end and leave it hanging there. That image fresh in your mind, you know exactly what the poet is saying, and I think that's a great move.
Andre Laurent, fabulous comment. And Francisco.
Yes, I thought the poem really touched on the senses here. You know, it had sensuality, romance, you know, but I think Oak does a fantastic job of.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I like, agreed. Thank you, Frank. What I like is, you know, how she uses the experience of making love, you know, how you can taste her amor in here. Like everybody brought out, you know, how locked lips with the maker, warm rosemary bread fresh from the oven. Bakers baked by the dozen, keeping, this made me smile, keeping biscuits warm under the quilt. And then I love her last ending line, at midnight, he tastes like spring. What a romantic and beautiful poem by Hope. And we're back to you, Greg.
Okay, so next we have Depression's Block by Nuno Cardoso. And I'll give this a read. The other day at work, I started having a panic attack. So I sat down in a pile of green wooden pallets. And while I hyperventilated, I scratched my hand so bad that dug two holes in my knuckles. I'll probably take a picture of it, upload it to my sketchbook app, and do an artsy-fartsy piece of digital art. I'll write a mediocre poem, as I have been lately. This one. To be specific, and get mad, get real mad at you, who specifically, whoever you are at this moment, the one reading this poem, I'll release my boiling water on you and on your expectations of my poem. Fuck you, you fucker. Yet I'll write. I'll write still. I'll post still. And I'll wait for every like and comment. For every opinion that I'll surely shout and curse under my nose, because the one I'm truly mad at is me. End poem.
Oh, great read. Gray Eyes of Nuno Cardoso's poem. And let's get him some comments. Laurent.
I knew you were going to do that to me. I was still focused on the last poem. You can come back to me, please.
Okay, well, yes, I can. Francisco.
Yeah, I've read this poem before. You know, he talks about moments such as having panic attacks or, you know, going through the notions of, you know, life experiences daily. And I thought, you know, as always with Nuno, his poetry is very genuine. You know, he uses a type of language that can be as redirect, but it's very appreciative. It's very eloquent even so. I thought he did a fantastic job in his poem, and I really think that the whole notion of depression, which we talked about before, is very much aligned with the panic attacks, and I know somewhat about those experiences, so it's very relatable. Okay.
Thank you. Excellent comment. And Gray, I would like to know what you thought of Nuno's poem.
Well, you know, the picture really is stunning. It makes you wonder if that's a real result of his poem, you know, the scratching is digging between his knuckles. But other than that, I mean, you know, depression is all-encompassing and ruthless. It definitely makes you hate the world, hate yourself, and very sad, you know, but at least he can write about it and share that. So poetry is cathartic.
I agree with you there.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You know, I was just, you know, depression's block. You know, people think that you can just snap out of it, those type of emotions that you're having, or that, you know, you can just snap out of a panic attack. You know, you can't. You know, you have to work very hard at trying to control those emotions by breathing. Or by like what Gray put out, you know, for me, poetry is a release of emotions that I can scribble out and, you know, things that bother me. And like, you know, he brings that here, you know, he's disappointed because he hasn't been able to write because depression can be a block to writing. And, you know, you get disappointed at yourself and you want to tell yourself to just snap out of it, but you can't. And so you just sit there and you know, you think you're actually scribbling nothing, but you're scribbling emotions that some of us have suffered from. And, you know, this means something to those that have gone through this. So this isn't just a crap poem or screw it poem. This is well written. And I really enjoyed this. And what did you think, Murat? Laurent, are you on mute?
No, I'm not on mute. I'm sorry. It's simply that time of evening when my mind begins to drift a little bit. I'm sorry about that. I like this artsy piece of digital art. I release my boiling water on you and on your expectations of my poems. And I'll wait for every like and comment, for every opinion that I'll surely shout and curse under my nose, because the one I'm truly mad at is me. It's not so much the poems and what people think of them. It's what you've done to make it a mediocre poem. And that, you know, that can really bother you sometimes when you write something that you think is good and you look at it later on and you go, oh, not so good. But, you know, that's that. You move on to the next one. I like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd say it's part of depression, too. You're going to doubt yourself regardless of what you do.
That's true. Excellent comments, everybody. And thank you, Nino. We enjoyed your poem. And we're back to you, Gray.
Okay, so next up we have Damn, That Sexy Smile by Francisco Del Mar, a.k.a. Frank. Now we'll play this. Yep, here we go.
There's something about those round lips of cherry blossom I crave. It's that glisten exuding from your sexy smile that's so captivating, and it makes your electric eyes shine like a morning rainbow, lighting up the delicate contours of your blushing cheeks. I could feel the moisture, the purity of your stunning beauty reflected in the tender look of your sweet smile, so tempting as you stare at me with a clever wink of playful concupiscence, and I just melt within the swoon of the bashful sunshine. My inquisitive eyes dance with the splendid grace of your smile as I dip into the fountain of the glittering sparkles of its radiance, and I touch the true essence of its magic and its mysticism with the mere caress of my gentle fingers stroking your pretty face. Your smile is a strong spell, enrapturing me in its seduction, causing me to be passionately blinded by its virginal gleam as I stare deeper into the mystery of its vibrant aura of exoticism. I am completely swept into the unique realm of its eroticism. Be the special one to entertain me with your teasing smile from that penetrating look of wildfire burning in your eyes, and show me the sultry sex appeal that drives me so crazy with only the sensual glance of a facial expression of yours. Damn that smile. Oh, damn that sexy smile. In the poem.
Oh, congratulations on your gold medal, Frank. Wow. I've got to say, there are several lines, and just the entire poem is fabulous. But you get to that last stanza, be the special one to entertain me with your teasing smile from that penetrating look of wildfire burning in your eyes, and show me that sultry sex appeal that drives me so crazy with only the sexual glance, a facial expression of yours. Oh, this is just gorgeous. You know, your fingers stroking your pretty face, you know, when you see that reflection in their eyes, it's just so sexy when it's returned. This is a gorgeous poem, Frank. And like I said before, congratulations on the gold, well-deserved gold medal.
Oh, gracias. Thank you very much.
Manuela. And Greg, what did you think of Francisco's poem?
Well, you know, I think this is top of the list as far as, you know, his sultry, sexy poems go. I said, Frank, you are a master, and this is top of the list. So great read and an excellent write.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Sammy.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Greg. And Laurent, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that Frank manages to do it every time. He's got an ability to excite the mind. He really does. I like the sexy smile and electric eyes, which shine like a morning rainbow. The moisture of the purity of your stunning beauty. Fountain of the glittering sparkles. Enrapturing me in its seduction. He describes things and he says things in a way that really draw the reader in. And just the way he says, I am completely swept into the unique realm of its eroticism, so is the reader, I think, swept into that realm where imagery and metaphors use each other to perfection, to stimulate the reader. And, wow. Can't go further than that. Oh, damn that sexy smile. Damn that sexy poem, you know.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Laurent. And thank you for hanging out with us, and sweet dreams, my friend.
Thank you.
Adios.
Sorry.
Buenas noches. Buenas
noches.
Thank you.
Happy to have you all the time. Thank you. And Gray, we're back to you.
Okay, so next up we have Vacation by Ole Lunin, and I will play the SoundCloud for that.
Okay.
Vacation. It's just a tiny cough. I can drag my existence out for another million years or so, when humanity finally figures out that death was just another disease to cure and forget. Right now, though, I dip my chalice in a stream where people wash their feet. I drink, I get drunk, I pass out, and in my fever dreams, I hear the good doctor pacing back and forth. We are losing him. I feel jealous. They are having a buffet out there, with flesh strips al dente and sweating, swearing hot nurses holding my horses, yet they never bothered to send an invite. So I jumped out of the bed and surprised everyone. Yet my cry is different somehow. I'm all small, bloody, and bold, and my tiny arms are flailing about. I guess it is a secret birthday party I was invited against my will. Where is my will? Give me that damn pen. It's just a tiny cough, sure, but you better watch those hands flailing about. You better observe those trends. You better keep your pants on until the mystic future cures us all. So we can finally sleep forever, but never die. Death is a disease. I want to sleep forever. Here is my earthy bed where people soil their feet.
What an he's a new poet. Ole, and I want to thank you for sending in that SoundCloud. I really love the images here of your vacation. I see where you said, it's not that they are my pants. It's part of the protagonist inventory, so to speak. When one gets to live for such a long span of time to see death cured, one might as well attach some hinges to their pants. I really liked his imagery here. I got a big kick where he started describing himself. Yes, my cry is different somehow. I'm all small, bloody, and bald, and my tiny arms are flailing about. I guess it's a secret birthday party. I was invited against my will. And then he goes into the next stanza. Where's my will? I did find humor in this. Not that it's funny that people die, but I did love his metaphors and his imagery. And welcome to Late Night Poets Radio Shows, Ole. Thank you, and I hope to hear more of your poems. Gray, what did you think of Ole's poem?
I thought he did a great read of it, you know. But I like the title of it, Vacation, you know, because it's a contradiction to the poem. You know, this is no vacation. This is life at its damnedest. And, you know, where is my will? Give me that damn pen. It's just a tiny cough, sure. But you have to watch those hands flailing up. You better observe those trends. You better keep your pants until the mystic future hears us all. I mean, you know, it's... definitely a hard-hitting and impactful write, so well done.
Thank you, Gray. And Francisco, what did you think?
I really like the whole notion here of the experience itself as being spoken here. You know, the imagery here from one moment, one instance to another, but I really like the creative nature of this poem. You know, I know it's not intended, you know, we shouldn't be laughing about death, as you said, but there is a, you know, sense of morbid humor to this poem and to that notion itself. I think that we all have to use him. I really like the way he encompassed the things that were surrounding him. The moment that he was describing, and I like that last line there about death, the earthly bed where people swallow their feet. You know, it's very reminiscent itself. So, but he did a fantastic job.
I do agree.
Thank you, Francisco. And back to you, Greg.
Okay, so next we have Black Knight of the Keylet by Iris Rose. If you wouldn't mind reading that to you.
I made a notation that she was going to call to read that, so I would like, can we go to another poem, Greg, please?
Okay, sure. One second here. All right, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so next we have Tuesday's ashen skies give up the ghost and there isn't an umbrella by Totoro. You wouldn't mind reading that, do you?
Okay. Tuesday's ashen skies give up the ghost and there isn't an umbrella in sight by Totoro. Winter's orange candle, burnout and Manhattan's Stonehenge is clung tight by steely fingers wrapped about its shoulders. I grab a red scarf and a herringbone jacket, one eye covered in a sea of hair. The black waves crash with each link. At the stairwell, we brush hands. There's a window open. Mid-December's late afternoon presses in like the deep blue Hudson as it churns gray ice past cinnamon pasoids and a snowflake galaxy flows atop the river. Words and stars cascade from my pockets, sparkle us and spiral amongst our feet, leave a map of constellations that evaporate as we stare. My life is a series of haiku on film, of stuttering frames and color mismatched vinaigrettes, laughter indiscernible, language over the hum of the projector, of blown dandelions, half-eaten dinner, and frogged windows, high heels, and I smell you on my dress. I look up and my cheeks are wet. It was only ever you in poem. Ah, what a fantastic poem by Totoro. What did you think of this poem, Gray Eyes?
I thought it was fantastic, and I really enjoyed the first comment on the poem by Smithy Nine. I'm looking for something not to like about this poem, maybe the Cynthia Hempel title or the haikus on film or As We Stare, but mostly everything is wonderful, maybe the tiniest bit too effortless, but all is forgiven because of the ending. You have the ability to make meaning where possibly there isn't any. Most poems I read are signs of struggle with text are ever present. There are none here. That troubles me in a way, as if your talent is greater than the fights you pick. But it's first impression, given your dedication to FPP. I'm expecting to find some gems there. And to Turo's response, thank you for your time and this incredible generous comment. Truly, I'm in shock reading it and appreciate everything you wrote. I'm not familiar with the name Cynthia Hempel, so I searched for Cynthia Hempel but did not find any hits that would be relevant. I've come up with an Amy Hempel and a Cynthia Hempel who may have written poetry, and we'll do more research later. Again, thank you for the comment. And then, you know, Smithy Nine replies with genius level rhythm craft and word choice. Love how you keep the text moving forward. Maybe drop ashen in the title since the huge title slightly undermines the serious intent of the poem. And so I thought it was beautiful. I mean, I agree with everything that Smithy said about the right, and it was fantastic. So great job. Thank you for sharing. And congratulations on your front page pick as well, Totoro.
Thanks, Greg. Thank you, Greg. And Francisco, what did you think?
I've also noted the poem had intriguing narrative, and the metaphors are very striking. You know, the way she talks about the stairway, the window, you know, the stars and so be it. It's just really reminiscent of reflection, you know, how we reflect on things, you know, and how we use things, you know, in our poetry to enhance our perception of life. But I thought overall this poem was ethnically
great. You know, I really thought this poem was beautiful. And, you know, she just brings up different moments and emphases of emotions. You know, her descriptions are rich. And then also the heartache in here, where she talks about that her life is just like a haiku. You know, that made me so sad. You know, those brief moments when we're in a relationship thinking, you know, to me the haikus can be very beautiful. And, but they're short, and to fall in love with somebody and then have it disappear like a haiku on film is deeply painful, you know, and she expressed that where she talks about fogged windows, high heels, and I smell you, oh my God. I look up and my cheeks are wet. It was only ever you, where that person that you fell in love with so deeply, no matter how many other short haikus are, you are the one that impressed in my mind and heart. And, you know, this is such a painful, sad ending, and I thought she did that beautifully. And congratulations on your well-deserved front page pick, Totoro. And we're ready for another poem, Gray.
Okay, so next we have a front page pick by called Midsummer's Night by Du Taju. If you wouldn't mind reading that, please, Frank.
All right. Yeah, if I'm permitted. It is called Midsummer's Night. The sunset warm and misty, the shadows dance in play, reminding us we made it through another dusk day. Darkness crawls across the sky, it paints a lazy moon. A soft breeze stirs the crickets now, they began to croon. Twinkling colors fill the sky, a masterpiece portrayed. We bear witness seeing how a summer night is in the poem.
Oh, what a gorgeous read, Frank. And I really enjoyed this poem by Du Taju. His imagery is just crisp as it is gorgeous. I loved it. The sunset warm and wispy, the shadows dance and play, reminding us we've made it through another blessed day. And, you know, his rhyme is just fabulous in here. What did you think about this poem, Gray?
I liked it. I mean, you know, it really captures the creation of a summer's day, and you know, it was an excellent read by you, Frank. So great job, everybody. Congratulations on the front page pick.
And Frank, you did a beautiful job in reading this brevity. What did you think?
Yes, I mean, I'm off my left eye there because I'm having issues with my eye, but I did my best.
Oh, no.
No, it's okay. It's just that my eyes aren't closed. I thought the poem itself was, you know, it really brought in the elements of nature and that whole sense of sunset, you know, and what comes, you know, during sunset and summer night. You know, it's a wholesome poem. It's really, it's not long, but it packs a great amount of imagery in a poem that's very much very relatable.
Agreed. Thank you, Frank. And we're ready for another poem, Gray.
So we have Christmas Eve with Grandma by Christmas Eve with Grandma Anna by Blue Raven. If you wouldn't mind giving that a read, please.
Okay. Christmas Eve with Grandma Anna by Blue Raven. Steam rises in Anna's kitchen. Plump droplets with scents of vanilla and soap that hover above the tin tub, waiting to be warmed with water bubbling on the stove. She hums her Danish tunes, accompanied by rhythmic rattling of burner and pot. We fasten blondish braids and tightens her apron during a pan of taffy. Then we're into the tub, my sister and me, scrubbed until we're rosy, fished out and dried, gowned in red flannel. And finally seated at the table, sleeves above our elbows, hands greased with butter, we pull the taffy and lick our fingers on the heating spider, laughing as we attempt to repeat her Danish words. So much of life lay ahead that Christmas Eve dimmed them as the lighted tree threw the fragrant steam, but a few times emerged more poignant in retrospect than that evening spent with our grandmother. End poem. Oh, my goodness, this was just beautiful poem by Blue Raven. Congratulations on your front page pick. What did you think of Blue Raven's poem, Gray?
You know, it's so touching and love-filled, you know. You can picture all this as it happens. It kind of makes you wish you that it was you because, I mean, everybody wants a grandma who sings while she's waiting for the kettle to boil. So, you know, I thought it was beautiful and touching throughout. So great job. Congratulations on your front page pick.
Thank you, Gray. And you, Francisco?
Yes, I'm going to echo the same sentiment here. We go through our memories and we cherish our memories, although perhaps our grandparents are no longer alive, but we still cherish them. It's fantastic. It's very effective with the metaphors here and the narrative and how she describes her grandmother in the experience shared there. And what this poem overall is really the essence of poetry when it's written in a personal aspect, in a personal nature as well. So overall, the poem was fantastically written. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
All tonight who've sent in front page picks. I'm frustrated myself. Front page picks for tonight, they are all worthy.
Agreed. You know, I really enjoyed her poem because, you know, this brings back memories for me of my abuelita, you know, her cooking in the kitchen with her pots and pans. And then I remember she had this big metal outside tub that she would fill with water and bubbles, and she would scrub us clean and then lay us down and pat us with baby powder and put on her gowns and, you know, of course, take us back into the kitchen, you know, to have us dip our pan dulces and warm, hot milk. This just made me remember my grandmother so much. And she didn't sing, but she would put music on, you know, her radio player, and I would just listen to the canciones. And I just, you know, she starts off with that first stanza, plump droplets with scents of vanilla and soap that hover above the tin tub, waiting to be warmed with water in the bubbling stove. You know, beautiful poem, well-deserved front page pick, Blue Raven. Thank you. And we are at the end of our show. I want to thank Gray Eyes. Thank you for taking over for Katie and Laurent. And Sarwa for calling in, and Frank and Kind Poet for hanging out in the group and making comments. I'll be here next Monday with more front page picks. I enjoyed all these poems tonight. And do you want to say anything, Gray and Frank?
No, buenas noches,
love everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Buenas noches y besitos. Good night and kisses to everybody. Yeah. We'll see you next Monday.
Hasta luego.
Gracias. Gracias. Good night.
Good night.